Hello, everybody. We are trying out a new kind of live chat, which is to say, we're not doing anything particularly formal. We don't really know what we're doing. In the past, the person in the my seat has been someone who runs more of this universe. So, yeah, we'll just see what happens, and this should be interesting. I'm Brooke Simmons. I am a Galaxy Zoo postdoc at Oxford. We're also joined
Rob's
by.
waving at you behind you.
I'm sorry.
That's so mean that he's making us do this without knowing what we're
See?
doing.
See what I mean? It's not just that the technical capability is low of the people on this. It's that the people who really know what they're doing are watching us fail.
And laughing,
Yeah.
apparently.
Very,
Yeah.
very
Really
enjoyable.
nice.
Anyway, so we're
Anyway.
joined by Karen Masters at Portsmouth, by Kevin Shavinsky at ETH Zurich, and by Kyle Witt at Minnesota.
Who's still
And
laughing at the antics going on behind Brooke's head?
Well, this is not my office normally. This is the view of my office. That is, in fact, my office back there, but there we have many visitors and things, so we thought it would be a good idea to move me so I don't disrupt people. You know, because they don't want to hear about spiral galaxies. I don't know.
That be true?
I don't understand it either. I don't know.
I
We
don't
have like a Planet Hunters visitor, and I guess she just thinks, God, galaxies, it's so boring. I'm finding
Oh,
planets. In fact, we did get a question from Twitter about other Earths, so we might come to that later. But for now, so there is this paper that got sent around to the Galaxy Zoo team that we didn't write. It's a computer science paper, if I understand that correctly. And we thought we might just chat about it amongst ourselves. And but of course, this is a public live chat, so this is going to be the first time we've talked about this paper in anything other than like a quirk email between us. So, in order to keep us from descending into jargon, we have a jargon gong, making use of Google effects.
should we try out the jargon
If somebody
gong?
would like to try out the jargon gong, any of us can ring it. Thank you. If you
There
hear that noise, it means that one of us has decided that whoever is speaking is using too many science words and needs to explain themselves better. So, right. So this paper. I have not read it in as much detail as I would have liked, but
How can you
Karen.
push this anymore?
That seems early.
It does seem
That
a
would be
little.
the jargon bomb. Just testing it out.
Okay. It's
Oh, okay. I see.
just
We,
a
I was
second
like, what
test.
did Brooke say that was jargon? She just said she hadn't read it.
Yeah. I
That's
said I haven't really
pretty
read the paper in
jarring.
detail. So I will try to
That's
summarize
what you
it.
say whenever you discuss a paper. You say, "Well, I haven't actually read it yet, but."
Oh, I see. So because it gets you off the hook, basically. Now, if I say something wrong, I can just say, oh, well, I must not have read that carefully. It's obviously, yeah. So I can try to summarize it a bit, but then maybe Karen, you could jump in and tell me and fill in the holes. So my understanding of it is, I mean, the basic problem is, it's a problem that we know really well in Galaxy Zoo, which is galaxies are complex, and one of the main structures in a disk galaxy, the spiral arms that make these beautiful patterns, is really, really hard for a computer to classify. And so people can do it, and Galaxy Zoo does it, but there's still a large push to get this to be better for computers to do by themselves, for many reasons, not least of which is that we're just ever moving into eras where we have more and more data, and we're going to, not that long from now, be presented with things where we have terabytes of data every night. And so we need faster computers, better computers, so that the human effort can be used more wisely. Anyway, so these guys said, let's figure out how to get a computer to find spiral arms and measure them and measure their pitch angles and measure all kinds of detailed quantitative things about them. And they've had success, as far as I could tell, and they actually compared with our results, which is why we were looking at it. And as far as I know, we did pretty well, or they did pretty well relative to us. So actually, Karen, do you know if, did they take Galaxy Zoo as like the standard, the thing that we should compare against because we're right?
I would put it that way. They compare against Galaxy Zoo, and they compare against both Galaxy Zoo 1 and Galaxy Zoo 2 data. And so what they did is, in Galaxy Zoo 1, we had the sense in which the spiral arms rotated, and what I was being distracted by was trying to come up with a picture of a galaxy to show everyone, since I learned how to screen share.
Ah, yes.
Let me see. Here we are. I'm going to share that.
Oh, very lovely.
Cool. That's M101, the pinwheel galaxy with some lovely spiral arms. And those spiral arms on my screen look to me like they're S direction spiral arms.
What does that mean? Wait, should we go on?
S, as in gong. That was a Galaxy Zoo 1 term where instead of saying clockwise, anti-clockwise, which is a bit ambiguous, what do you mean by that? We asked people to compare whether they were in the direction of an S. Actually, if I stop screen scaring, you can see an S. Well, everyone knows what an S looks like, right? Or if they were in the direction of a Z.
Oh, so, I see.
You see what I mean? Yeah.
So an S or a Z without the corners.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just imagine like an arm on the top, arm on the bottom. Which way forward would that look most like?
Yeah. There's no smooth letter that's an opposite of an S. Maybe a 5.
They did mention, I think, in the paper that there was this question of whether the whole universe is rotating, has a preferred direction, and
that's right. Yeah, one of the original motivations for Galaxy Zoo was to test these claims that spirals had a preferential rotation direction. And we demonstrated with Galaxy Zoo 1, that was one of the very first papers, Kate Land, that wasn't the case. Oh, there's me again, yay. Anyway, so in this paper, they tried to find the spirals automatically, and they compared both whether or not they got the direction right, they compared whether or not they got the direction right with Galaxy Zoo 1, and they said they agreed pretty well. I don't know if they're taking Galaxy Zoo as the truth, but they're sort of comparing their method with Galaxy Zoo.
Okay. I don't think we know what the truth is in this case. I think they're looking at their automated image analysis method, and they're looking at what we provide for ours and seeing if they agree. But there's no larger, at least not that they're comparing to, there's no large catalog you can say it's definitely a clockwise or counterclockwise spiral to look at. So,
in fact, yeah. One of the findings from Galaxy Zoo 1 was that people preferentially pick one direction over the other direction, independent of whether the image was the right way around or flipped. So there seemed to be something going on that made people not really be able to tell in some cases, maybe when the galaxies are really patchy. And in fact, M101, again, is a pretty good example of that, I think.
Well, that's kind of a human psychology effect, isn't it, Karen, rather than...
Yeah.
Well, it's right brain versus left brain, right?
It's probably a human brain effect.
So which actual figure, since we can do screen sharing, actual figure is the one that compares with Galaxy Zoo? And did they use Galaxy Zoo 2?
Yeah.
Yes.
Compares with Galaxy Zoo. With Galaxy Zoo 2. So Galaxy Zoo 2 didn't just have the spiral arm direction. In fact, I don't think it had that anymore. But it had how many spiral arms do you think you see? And also how tight you think they are. So do you think they're really, really tightly wound spiral arms, or do you think they're quite loose? And so they have compared their pitch angle. Is someone going to gong me?
I've got the window up. Wait.
Yes! Yeah. Pitch angle. What does pitch angle mean? So basically, it's just the angle between... What is pitch angle? Help! I know what it is.
Isn't it sort of how many degrees it takes for it to do one rotation?
No, I think it's like the degree between radial direction and the spiral arm. So if it's like...
Oh.
It's a measure of how tightly wound the spiral is, I believe.
Yeah, well, yes, definitely. I think there are different ways to define it, but you can think of it as a higher pitch angle is a more tightly wound?
No, other way around.
Or the other way around.
Lower pitch angle is more tightly wound. Maybe it's the angle to tangential? Like how...
See, I told you guys this is the first time we've discussed this.
Mm-hmm. I see Chris now laughing at us in the background. Anyway.
this is me trying not to make a rude gesture to people I can't see behind me.
Yeah.
What people behind you?
So, there is a measure of tightness of spiral arms.
Yes.
Which we call the pitch angle.
Yes. And Kyle has hit hang up instead of screen share again, I reckon.
Oops.
Uh-oh. But
I hope he'll join again.
Get back in now.
Do I have to invite him again?
I don't think so. I think he'll just reappear, right?
Well, I'm going to try.
So how's that? Can you see? If I talk now, I get big, right? And then everyone can see the figure. This is the figure they showed, comparing what they found with pitch angle with what Galaxy Zoo people found. And that is a really classic astronomy paper figure. It has lots of lines on it that show something. But so the blue line shows the fraction of galaxies with a given pitch angle that Galaxy Zoo people agreed really strongly were tightly wound. And so you can see that that really sort of clumps most of the things with small pitch angles, Galaxy Zoo people, Galaxy Zoo volunteers classified as being tightly wound. And the red is the same kind of thing. So the fraction of galaxies at a given pitch angle that the Galaxy Zoo volunteers classified as loosely wound. And that, you see, is picking out the large pitch angles. And then you see the green one, that's the medium category. And their conclusion from this is that the medium category in this question sort of turned into an I don't know category. So that if it wasn't really clearly tightly wound or really clearly loosely wound, a lot of people plumped for medium spiral arms. And so we don't actually get a lot of information on the spiral arm windiness from that question, from that answer.
So I have a question. It's a more general question.
In those cases, probably it's not possible.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
So those clicks are actually incredibly valuable information.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I didn't mean to say the clicks were not valuable, just that,
there was an interesting phrase in the abstract that I recall reading that said something about how we needed more clear measures or something. And there was an implication to me that Galaxy Zoo is not quantified, and that actually seemed really inaccurate if that was how it was meant, because as Kevin said, one of the strengths of Galaxy Zoo is that you have visual classification that's quantified, and you know how certain you are, how uncertain you are. Generally. I think I'm sharing my screen. Is that right?
You are.
Good, because I figured if I talked, I still want the plot to show.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So, So my question was, where does the computer still fail, and where does it get it right? I mean, what can we learn from this about how we can best use our Galaxy Zoo volunteers, how we can best use their time? Like, do we need to ask this question anymore about tight, medium, or loose, or do we still need to ask this question? Can we move on to something more advanced? What do we think?
Well, I don't know. I don't think I've read it closely enough to ask the question.
Classic, I know.
It seems to agree pretty well. Mm-hmm.
I think the agreement is good. Whether it could be better, I think, is an open question. But I would not be surprised that where the citizen scientists still are much more accurate is when you get into the low signal to noise or the poor image quality regime. So in particular, when we look at the Hubble images from the deep field, which are in the Hubble Zoo right now, I bet you doing this kind of detailed analysis by computer would actually be a lot harder and perhaps a lot less accurate.
Maybe that's a really patchy spiral arms as well. I mean, I can imagine this working really well for very smooth, very obvious spiral arms, but where spiral arms are much patchier and not quite so well defined, you know, maybe it doesn't work quite so well. So
those the infamous flocculent spirals.
Flocculent spirals, indeed.
You can call myself that.
Yeah.
That's me. Sorry,
should we have a race? Who can come up with a picture of a flocculent spiral faster? But it won't mean anything unless we have a grand design as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I have a flocculent.
For grand design, flocculent spiral.
Does M101 count as grand design or flocculent? I reckon it's flocculent.
Yeah,
that's,
I think
so. M101 is close to flocculent, yeah.
Okay, so I'll take care of flocculent, someone else do grand design.
Okay, I will share. I'll share my Bulges paper because it has a whole bunch of spirals in it, and that would be more useful.
Ooh, lots of pictures.
Right. So I figure at the top left of this screen is a flocculent spiral.
Yeah.
Right.
And then. Can you point with your mouse? Does that work?
Okay, I don't think so. I am right now. I don't think that works. Does?
Yeah.
Okay, so I figure that's a flocculent spiral. That's not so flocculent. Right, like that, you can pretty clearly see the arms.
That one's a grand design. That one you're pointing at now, 1202, blah blah blah. Yeah,
it's also a broadline AGN, and it was also on the Galaxy Zoo forums. It was the object of the day recently.
Broadline AGN.
Oh, good point. Yeah, sorry. It has that little point, the little white point in the very middle. There's all these little red points. Those are actually foreground stars from our galaxy that we happen to be seeing as the light comes in. But that white point is emanating from the very center of the galaxy where there is a black hole that lots of material is falling onto. And as it falls on it, it heats, it radiates, and then so it gives off a lot of light, and we're looking kind of directly at it. It's not blocked by anything, so we can see these features in the spectrum that are broad lines as opposed to normal lines. So those are, I don't know how a computer algorithm would handle the left. In fact, I do know. That's not true. I do know. Because in this computer science paper, they talked about Galfit, which is another program that can do some analysis on spiral arms. Mm. It is not recommended that that program be used the way they did to run on a large sample, because it's kind of touchy. So I ran it on this sample that is now showing. I only tried to accommodate for the spiral arms within that computer program when I had to, because I was trying to get very detailed fits of just the middle here. And sometimes you have to do it or the whole galaxy goes off if the spiral arm is strong enough. And I remember in this left galaxy, it just really couldn't handle the flocculent spiral very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it really, what it's modeling in that program is it's more modeling grand design. And I should say, too, that's probably, if Chen, the creator of that program, were watching this right now, he'd say, no, it can handle it fine, you just didn't know how, which is true. I'm sure it could model just about anything. It's very, very robust. It's got lots of different features built in. But it wasn't necessary. So I just ended up with, in fact, I can show what the fits look like. So this now is that same top left galaxy where this is the galaxy in one filter, so it's black and white. We don't have a color. And then I've fit it with a computer modeling program that has a totally smooth profile, no spiral arms. And then you can see when it's subtracted, when I subtract that model, you can see you can still see the structure left. Whereas I have tried to model the spiral arms in some of the other ones. This one, for example, has the spiral arms modeled, so they don't show up quite as much. And this one, for example, I was able to pretty much completely subtract this part. It's very tricky, though, so I'm impressed that they got this to work.
I think it's a nice paper showing the complementarity of running these automated things but having some visual inspection and, you know.
Yeah, I think that that's the way we have to go forward, actually, is to combine, it, not to just run them in parallel. I think we have to use the computers as well as possible to make the best use of Galaxy Zoo volunteers' time.
If we have a few minutes,
the future for the zoo, thinking of ideas how to optimally do that, I think is something that a lot of people are starting to really think about.
Mm-hmm. What were you saying, Kara?
Well, I was just wondering if we wanted to, we didn't want this to go too long, and
right.
We wanted to sort of switch gear a little bit and talk about spiral arm formation mechanisms, and I wanted to mention the fact that one of the sort of pioneers of developing theories of spiral arm formation actually died a couple of weeks ago. I just learned that yesterday, so I thought it'd be kind of nice to mention him.
Okay.
And yesterday at Portsmouth here we had a seminar on some new ideas about how spiral arms are formed. So sort of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I was learning about how spiral arms form, very much the picture was the spiral density wave. That the spiral arms were not material. They're not things where the stars stay in them the whole time and just rotate all together. Because if you know how stars rotate in a galaxy, that just wouldn't work. The spiral arms would wind up and dissipate really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was, since we see spiral arms everywhere, they must last for a really long time. And so instead of being a material thing, they've got to be some kind of density wave, described very nicely like a Mexican wave in a football match.
That's a good one. I think of it also as like a traffic jam, too.
Yeah. So the stars go in and out of the waves, but the wave persists and keeps going around. Anyway, so one of the inventors of that idea was, here we can screen share, and show Chia Chow Lin, who was a Chinese-American mathematician, actually, worked at MIT and developed with his collaborator, Xu, who's first name I don't know.
Frank.
Sorry, Frank Shu. Of course, yes, of course I knew that.
He was in the audience for my AAAS talk this last week, and I was so nervous.
Anyway, so Lin and Shu, 1966, is sort of the classic spiral density wave paper that everyone cites. Chow Chow Lin died at age 96 earlier in January. But that wasn't the main point of the talk we had. The main point of the talk we had was that maybe we don't need spiral density wave theory actually these days, because we actually think that spiral arms might not persist for really long times, and actually they might just be constantly forming and dissipating and reforming and dissipating, and that seems to be more what the picture is that is being shown in n-body simulations these days. And so maybe we're moving back away again from density wave ideas about spiral arms back to them being material arms that the stars stay in for a long time, but the spiral arm itself doesn't persist that long, maybe just 100 million years.
So when it dissipates, Karen, does that, you still have a disk galaxy though, right? You're not, there's nothing catastrophic that's creating like an elliptical or a larger bulge.
No, no, absolutely not. In fact, the spiral arms in the simulations he showed were coming and going and coming and going. I mean, at any given time, there was a spiral arm pattern there. It just wasn't the same all the time.
Okay, so then the yeah. snapshot kind of demographic of we have, for example, of the number, the of what we know with Zoo 2, of like the number of two-arm versus three-arm versus four-arm is more of a representation of how long-lived those various modes are then.
Yeah, I mean, given that this is now an active debate between which is the best model for spiral arm theory, that information is going to be really valuable because, that's really a test. Density wave theory very clearly predicts that two-arm spirals should be the most dominant thing, whereas this other method, it's not quite so clear, I think.
Mm-hmm. So that's a very quick, interesting Galaxy Zoo 2 science result that could come out soon.
I believe Stephen has done a fair amount of work with a couple of his students on that already. I know he has a draft.
Yeah.
So I think
that's
at this
right.
point we're kind of waiting for. I think he would like to, amongst other things, make sure we're using these corrected probabilities and redo it. But he's done quite a lot of the analysis already, and certainly I know off the top of my head that we have more two-arm spirals than anything else amongst people who click the spiral question. But there's certainly a lot more work to be done as far as, narrowing that down to, disks of it, looking at how that ranges for disks of a certain mass and then of a certain size and at what redshift and so forth. But Stephen has started this work. I think he's eager to finish it. So
cool.
Everyone keep prodding him next time you talk to him.
So I suppose that seems like a good place to kind of wrap things up, and we can maybe try to, there's Chris again. We can maybe try to, yeah, take that one question. We got one question I definitely know we got, which I don't have up. Does anybody have it up right now?
It's on Twitter?
Yeah, we got a question on Twitter.
Tweeted to Galaxy Zoo?
Yes.
Is that possibility of another living outside planet? Oh, hang on, what?
Right, so the actual question wording was...
Is there possibly another living thing outside planet Earth?
Right, so thing was not in the original tweet, but we
thing
are...
was not, but I should that's what's meant.
Is there life on another planet?
Life on another... Well, I think the short answer is yes. There's possibly another living planet.
And if I'm allowed to state that, in fact, the spiral arm, the question of whether the spiral arms are material or density waves has relevance to this question.
That's true.
Because whether or not stars are constantly moving in and out of spiral arms or staying where they are, outside or inside a spiral arm, might have an impact on the habitability. Because we know star formation is happening in the arms.
Right.
So it's kind of thought that stars in the actual arms themselves are not so great environment for life. Whereas
are we in an arm? Or I thought we were in an arm.
We're in an arm. Our data sample of one currently indicates that all life occurs in spiral arms.
Aren't we in the edge of an arm?
Oh, yeah, I think yeah, we're sort of on the outskirts, and yeah,
we're still in one.
Right in the center of the arm, right?
But you have more star formation toward the edges of arms, don't you?
I don't know. Well, that would depend.
You have that T-shirt image with the "We Are Here" with the picture of the galaxy. I don't.
Because it's so accurate, we've flown around and matched it really carefully.
No, I think it does go into it. I think my cheeky answer of yes, it's possible, is based on, there's all kinds of results that are recently coming out of teams like the Kepler team and people who study exoplanets, people who do microlensing and other ways of finding planets. There are many different ways of finding planets. Find from different... I know, I said microlensing is jargon. It's just one kind of way where a planet, it lenses a star. The light behind you.
Okay, but I was just teasing.
Gong her again.
No!
I'm not doing anything.
We'll let that one go.
Anyway, the point is that multiple different groups are now coming up with estimates of how many planets there are in the galaxy. and it's sort of roughly one per star, I think, or more.
Yep.
So that doesn't mean every star has a planet. It just means that there are lots of planets in the galaxy, and that's just one galaxy, and we know there are billions of galaxies out there. So I think, is it possible that there's other life? Yeah, it certainly is. I don't think we have any knowledge yet.
We've moved the question from, are there other places in the universe where life could exist, such as other planets? We now know that there are lots of other planets. It really moved the question on to how suitable for life are these planets. And if they are suitable, and we're, I think, also on the cusp of figuring that out, then it's really a question of biology, as in, as long as the conditions are right, do you get life? Mm-hmm. And we don't really know the answer to that.
I should say I am now actually looking up the Twitter account of the person who tweeted this at us. So the name is Gara Corleone, and based on the picture, I think it's a girl. Gara could be either way. The username is Garacturus, and the bio line is, I'm not coming from the Earth. Location, M31 NGC 224.
Can you tell us if there's a black hole in M31?
People are tweeting us from M31. We have now proved there's life outside.
That's right.
The fact that it's 775,000 light years away, or whatever.
That question was asked a really, really long time ago. Obviously,
they were just asking us 775. It's probably not even.
I thought it was millions of light years away.
Kiloparsecs, right?
Something like
kiloparsecs. Go.
Sorry, I don't have the gong up. I've got the Twitter feed up. All right, so before we descend into complete silliness, we've kind of got over time. I think we meant for this to be about a 10 or 15 minute chat, but we've...
Yeah.
So
why don't we just sort of wrap up and we'll think about
it. I think we're going to try to do these a little more often and just sort of have a little more fun with it, and we'll see how it goes. So thanks, everybody. We'll be on YouTube, and we're going to put up a blog post and all of that, assuming that we can, figure out technically how to do it. No, I'm sure we
can. You can also show we're fine. Or comment. Oh.
Sorry, say again.
Are we making the jargon gong an institution?
I think we should.
Yeah.
We'll see how it works. We'll ask for comments and see how the jargon gong works. And we'll see about maybe getting people to tweet us with a gong sound so that if they hear jargon.
We invite one Zooite and then give them the gong button. So we'll have a control sample.
I nominate Alice to start, but we'll talk with her.
Sure.
Penguin Galaxy. All right. So thanks, guys, and we'll see you all later.
Thanks, Brooke. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is an audio-only recording of a Galaxy Zoo video hangout. The video and any images we talked about are available from blog.galaxyzoo.org, which is also where we live broadcast our hangouts. You can participate in the Galaxy Zoo project by visiting galaxyzoo.org. If you have questions for the next hangout, visit the blog and leave a comment or tweet us at Galaxy Zoo. Thanks.